Welcome to PASIG Practice Pearls, where performing arts physical therapists share their expertise and discuss some of the unique needs of keeping artists healthy.
Hello, everyone. My name is Isabella Skangmore. I am an orthopedic physical therapist and will be the host of this episode of the Performing Arts Special Interest Group's Practice Pearls podcast. I will be joined by Elizabeth Ballard to discuss orthotic considerations for the dancer. Elizabeth holds a Doctor of Physical Therapy degree from Murphy Deming College of Health Sciences at Mary Baldwin University and a Bachelor of Science degree in Athletic Training from Western Carolina University. She is also a board-certified clinical specialist in orthopedic physical therapy and serves as the program manager for foot and ankle physical therapy at St. Luke's. She enjoys mentoring and teaching specialty areas of practice such as gait evaluation, orthotic prescription, and management of foot and ankle pathologies in the Orthopedic Physical Therapy Residency Program at St. Luke's. Elizabeth's clinical interests are in outpatient orthopedics, management of pediatric orthopedic conditions, and sports medicine. Within sports medicine, she has worked with a variety of specialty areas in performing arts. Her performing arts experience includes dance, theater, cheer, gymnastics, and musicians. Welcome, Liz. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, me too.
All right, jumping right on in. How does one become an orthotist? What is the process of becoming a person who can order or design custom orthotics? Where do we send these orders?
So that's a good question. There are a couple different ways to get there. So prior, there were a bunch of programs in the country where you could actually become a certified ped orthotist, and that involved specialty training. So beyond any other entry-level training you might have, you'd go on and complete an additional program, and it usually involved a certain level of hours. Every program was different, but typically I'd say around 1,000 hours of extra training alongside a specialist in that area, and then you'd sit for an exam and be credentialed by an accrediting body. However, very few programs exist. I actually was even doing a little web search before I jumped on here to see how many were out there. A couple years ago, I actually looked into doing it, and I think there were one or two programs left in the US, and I actually could not find any left today. So the way you become a specialist in this area today is just doing specialty training. So working with somebody who does this all the time, you know, having mentors in the field. I've done a lot of clinical practice with a couple different CPEDs, a CPED who's also, so CPED is a acronym for the certified ped orthotist, or a shortened version of that. I've worked with a CPED who's duly credentialed as a PT and a CPED. So they get kind of that clinical background of what it means to be a physical therapist, of kind of that whole full patient picture in addition to the specialty training and just orthotics. And then I've worked with orthotists who truly their job is to work in a lab. They get a prescription form, they get a scan, they get a mold of a person's foot, and then their job is to build the device. So I worked with people who are much more lab-based, people who are much more clinical-based, and I've used that opportunity, and along with research I've done as well in this area, to kind of mold the best clinician that I can be. But right now, the way you become a specialist in this is mentoring and getting that extra help and those extra hours.
Great. Now, if someone does not have access to someone who has all that wonderful training and all that mentorship, how would they go about ordering one if we need to, or seeing if a patient needs to be assessed for a custom orthotic?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, where do you begin if you have no idea where to begin, right? So for most of us, as physical therapists, you get very little knowledge. And I would say some PT programs maybe don't even teach orthotics at all. Like I had a one-day lab lecture on orthotics, and I couldn't begin to tell you what we talked about that day in class, you know. And I think most people, if they don't go out into practice and use it, they don't remember those one day labs that they had in PT school either. Or, you know, even residency trained in orthopedics, again, I had a one day lab, which was really cool, where we went super in depth into it, but I didn't practice it. Mm-hmm. So I'd recommend that you start working with a lab, with an orthotist, who can really expand your knowledge. So when I first started prescribing orthotics, the lab that I currently work with, I would call up the orthotist and I would talk through cases every time. I'd say, I have X patient in front of me with X diagnosis. This is the device that I'm thinking I want. And sometimes I started very general with the terms that I did know. I'd say, you know, based on their foot structure, I know that they need rear foot control. So I know that they need this, or I know that they need a semi-rigid device. And then the more experience, the more I learned on what accommodations I did most often for most diagnoses. So I'd say really try to find somebody that you can network with. And most labs, you know, that you're going to order from are going to have that person available, right? They have people there who are CPEDs who do this every day, and they're awesome resources. So I would say start by utilizing someone in the lab that you're going to order from. Look for continuing ed courses on GAIT. That's been an awesome help as well. There are definitely great resources out there in terms of continuing ed. There are virtual things that you can do through places like MedBridge, or, you know, courses that you can go out and really expand your knowledge on this. But I think the biggest help for me was reaching out to the orthotist that I work with most often and the lab that we work with. And he's been a tremendous help in helping me learn all the different accommodations. And I mean, to this day, you know, I've been prescribing orthotics for 4 to 5 years. This morning, I had an interesting patient come in with a deformity I'd never seen before. And I called him up and said, "Hey, I think this is what I want to do with this patient, but like, have you ever seen this type of foot deformity before? And what do you think about it?" And he talked me through it and was like, "Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. I had on the right track." Or, you know, like, "Hey, maybe let's don't poster quite this much. In my experience, these patients don't respond as well to this type of device." So, that having somebody you can bounce ideas off of and continue to be a mentor and continue to be a sounding board is really important as you're learning and as you're growing in this area.
Awesome. So for someone that does not yet have a lab that they're affiliated with, do you go through like a Google search, or would you look for an insurance company that you see frequently?
So I'd say for the most part, that's a Google search and finding out potentially maybe what's in your area. So, you know, specifically, I know this is not a proprietary talk and we're not supporting any specific businesses out there. But I use a lab that's fairly local to the East Coast and is very personable. They're not one of the big mass producers in the country. I mean, they are affiliated with a lot of major athletes, and that's kind of how I got into working with them, that they do almost exclusively the NFL, the NBA, all your professional sports. They do most NCAA sports. Mm-hmm. And me and my background in athletic training, I had worked with them before and knew of them. But I would say a Google search for the most part could help the average PT find potentially a lab that's local to them, that they could even potentially go out and see the lab. I think seeing the devices being made, seeing what production looks like also really helps as well. But a Google search is where I would start, or again, reach out to maybe a colleague. If you know somebody in another clinic that says, "Hey, our office does orthotics," reach out, say, "Do you like them?" Because even in my experience here in this network, I've talked to 3 other offices that have used orthotics in the past. And I often hear, "Oh, we switched reps," or "We switched to this company. I'm really just not happy with what we're finding." So I think even reaching out to some of your colleagues, if you have friends in other networks, and saying, "Hey, what do you guys use? Are you happy with the devices you're using?" And you might find somebody who's like, "Oh my God, this is the best thing ever." Or you might also find, "Oh, that's not a company I want to go with too."
Yes. So on more the clinical end of things, what does the intervention of an orthotic look like within the big scheme of a plan of care?
So if we're looking at the big scheme of things in terms of physical therapy, I would say an orthotic's a pretty small part of the plan of care. It's super important and a part that shouldn't be missed by any means. But overall, it's a one-day evaluation to decide, you know, what type of device is best for a patient, or if any. There are definitely patients who walk in my door that are sometimes sent to me for a consult, and I say at the end of the day, "I actually think maybe this is coming from your hip," or, you know, "Maybe somewhere further up," or, "Once you do some mobility work, I actually think that your foot structure is going to improve," or, you know, "Maybe you're extremely postplantic, but doing all these other things, addressing all these other deficits, I see, you actually might not need an orthotic down the road. So it's not always prescribing one, but I would say that's typically a one-day evaluation where I'm looking at gait, I'm looking at range of motion, I'm looking at mobility, I'm looking at static foot posture and stance, mm-hmm. And then all those unweighted things as well that I already mentioned in terms of range of motion, mobility, and can they even achieve a neutral position? Mm-hmm. And then based on that, you know, I follow a prescription form that has a step-by-step process where I include the patient's diagnosis. I include their weight. The weight of a patient's actually pretty important in terms of prescription as well. You know, the bigger the person is, the more control they might need, the more rigid device to control their weight, versus the smaller a person is, they can get away with a little bit lighter, more accommodative device. Mm-hmm. And then based on that, again, I follow a step-by-step process and I want this accommodation. I want this semi-rigid device or this rigid or this accommodative device. I want it either full length or I don't, you know, or I want it to go into an athletic shoe, or maybe I want it to go into a street shoe, or even potentially, you know, a flat or a dress shoe or something like that. But that typically is just a one-day evaluation. And then the rest of my plan of care looks pretty similar to other plan of cares. And then once the device comes in, I spend one day fitting the device to the type of shoe that I'm putting it in.
Okay. So it sounds like you try to normalize foot function with all of our other PT toolbox tricks before going towards more like orthotic consultation to see if that's the missing piece of the puzzle. Is that correct?
I'd say, you know, that's one of those good, it depends questions, right? And physical therapy, those that you hate to hear, but it does truly depend. Sometimes it's day one, truly a patient walks in the door and I say, oh my gosh, your foot structure is terrible. You need a whole lot of other things, but you also need this. And it's going to take a couple of weeks to get in. So I order it day one. And sometimes you're absolutely right. It's down the road. You know, I've been working with a patient for a little while and I say, hey, let's take a little closer look at your foot. Or, hey, maybe we've tried some things like taping or an over-the-counter insert or some other things and you've responded well to that. I think the missing piece is an actual custom orthotic that can give you a little bit more control. But oftentimes it is a combination of that, of my true PT plan of care and of an orthotic consult as well.
Do you ever have to modify the orthotic throughout the plan of care? Such as maybe if the dancer's foot gets a little bit stronger or if something changes and their biomechanics improve, how would you manage these curveballs?
Well, absolutely. And sometimes, you know, as you know, many athletes, especially our dancers, can be quite picky in devices that they use, right? Especially putting something in their feet. That I definitely modify. And sometimes it's truly just to make them happy. You know, maybe they're getting a blister somewhere and there's some rubbing in their arch. And while I put them in what is truly a neutral position, maybe they don't like it. So I still have to lower it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I would say one of the most common things that I see modifications for, especially for our dance population, are if somebody potentially had a stress fracture.
Yeah.
So sometimes with a stress fracture, I'll offload the bone that's fractured in order to give them a little extra cushion, in order to decrease some of their pain. But down the road, having that cut out in an orthotic could actually lead to another injury, could lead to some other overuse injury and throw off their biomechanics. So once that fracture is healed, then I put them back in a normal orthotics. So like a common one might be like a fifth metatarsal stress fracture, yeah, that I would offload. And then, so I do like specifically a cutout for that fifth metatarsal to offload it, decrease their pain, but I wouldn't want them to continue to have that and to continue to function with that down the road. So once things have healed, that can be taken away or filled in.
Awesome. And you kind of touched on this idea when you were talking about how you go through the process of your consult. When we're utilizing the non-weight bearing and weight bearing exams, such as the foot posture index, maybe for someone who's considering referring out for a consult or making that phone call through the orthotic company, how can we integrate the difference between weight bearing and non-weight bearing into the clinical decision-making with the idea of, does the patient in front of me need orthotics?
That's a great question. So I would say your patient, and it depends, again, it's kind of a depends, right? But I'll give you two different scenarios. So for example, the patient who's extremely flexible, mobile foot, but extremely pes planus, right? That person, probably no matter how much posterior tip strengthening you do, no matter how much intrinsic strengthening you do, that arch is just going to collapse in. Mm-hmm. That's a person that I'm going to say probably day one, like, hey, I'm going to give you some things. I still think the posterior tip strengthening is important. I still think the intrinsic strengthening is important. If I'm finding deficits further up the chain, we're going to address those as well. But you probably need more than that. And it's not going to change the structure of your foot. Mm-hmm. But then on the opposite end of the spectrum, I would say some of those extremely hypomobile patients. Mm-hmm. So the person, you know, maybe your dancer who's already developing like a hallux rigidus, right? Mm-hmm. That first ray is pretty fixed, and you can tell right off the bat, this is super hypomobile. Yeah. There's probably no amount of joint mobs that I can do that's going to get this thing to be normal again, right? Or already developing some of those deformities, some of those HAVs, you know, those valgus deformities as well at the toes. And just feels pretty rigid. Those are the people that I'd say, hey, we're going to work on it. We're going to work on some mobility, but I can already tell you're super rigid and we need to accommodate for this rigidity. Mm-hmm. But then there are those who, you know, like say your dancer with plantar fasciitis who comes in and maybe she's got like 30 degrees of great toe extension, right? Mm-hmm. But in the eval, you're feeling it and you're like, this is pretty mobile. I just did 5 minutes of joint mobs and you gained like 20 degrees of extension. Those are people who I probably wouldn't jump to put in an orthotic. I'd continue to do the manual interventions, mm-hmm. Address all the things that I could address first. And if it didn't improve, then she'd be the person down the road or he down the road that I'd put in an orthotic further on.
Yes, that makes a ton of sense. Again, it depends situation and using your best clinical judgment, but also a little bit of pattern recognition. What are your thoughts on using orthotics more as symptom relief, such as in the case of really flared up plantar fasciitis?
You know, for the patient who developed plantar fasciitis because of overuse and wasn't stretching or warming up properly, and you can give them all those tools, all that education, they know when to begin hitting their exercises if they start to feel this pain again and when to seek treatment, mm-hmm. but they have a neutral foot, their mobility is good, their strength is good. And you look at them in stance, you look at them with their functional movement of dance and you're like, you're maintaining your foot posture. It's not, it's not collapsing. Or on the other end of the spectrum, you're not, you know, because plantar fasciitis is often that foot type that's both ends of the spectrum. So it's either your super high cavus rigid foot or it's the super pes planus, like flexible foot that's mm-hmm. collapsing in. But obviously there's those rooms in between where people do get plantar fasciitis because of overuse or poor mechanics or, you know, something else going wrong in their functional activity. Mm-hmm. And for those people, that's kind of that mid-range. Once it's resolved, I think it's more about education of when to go back to your exercises. Like, hey, yeah, maybe this orthotic felt nice. It was nice and squishy or accommodative, or and maybe I did a specific cutout for where you were tight or added some padding to your heel. Or maybe I even, you know, dropped that first ray down because you didn't have great toe extension. I was able to help you, you know, propulse forward by doing that. But down the road, you don't really need it because now we've regained full great toe extension, mm-hmm. or you're not having pain. Those are the people that I say could get rid of it. But the ones who, again, are that extremely pes planus or on the opposite end of the spectrum, extremely pes cavus, and I think their foot structure actually contributed to it, those mm-hmm. people shouldn't toss them. But they might be the people who don't need some of the accommodations down the road. Like maybe it doesn't need to be quite so cushioned, or maybe it doesn't need the cutout for the tight plantar fascia if it improves, but they still need the control of the device itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With that, what are some clinical indicators that the aesthetic athlete might need to be considered for orthotics for their dance shoes?
And that's a great question. I think it depends on the style of dance that they're doing, right? And the type of shoe that they want to put it in. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, some shoes, there's just no way to get anything in it. You know, but there are a lot of shoes that you can put an orthotic in. And I would say I tend to lean towards the more severe pes planus flat feet. Those are the ones that I want to get in something sooner. And yeah. That can be at any age. I mean, I just fitted a 10-year-old female the other day, but had extremely, extremely flat feet. I mean, yep. to the point that podiatry is considering doing surgery on her already. Mm-hmm. She's got pretty extreme callusing over her navicular where she's just collapsing in on it. Yep. And someone as young as that, even if she's only dancing a couple hours a week, I would absolutely advocate for her to be in an orthotic. And honestly, it's going to improve her function, right? Just like any other level of dance we talk about or any other athlete we talk about, if you can correct those mechanics, right? If she's no longer collapsing in on her navicular, no longer collapsing into that pes planus, is in a more neutral position, everything she does is going to look better, right? Her turnout's going to look better. You know, all of her leaps, her landing, all of that's going to look so much better. And her control is going to be so much better from the ground up if she's in an orthotic. And then, you know, obviously I would push for some of those more professional dancers who are putting in a lot higher volume throughout the week, that if they've had major overuse injuries throughout their career, if they've had stress fractures, you know, the shin splints or medial tibial stress syndromes, the constant tendonitises, and it's truly attributed to their foot posture, those things are just going to continue to happen until they correct their mechanics. Those are the people that absolutely need to be in an orthotic.
Continuing with different styles of shoes for different dance styles, can you talk about how some shoes might assist with or hinder certain biomechanics? For example, the pointe shoe.
Point shoes, oh my gosh, they're horrible for normal biomechanics, right? I actually was just looking at an orthotic for point shoes the other day, where the patient actually molds their own foot to it. Mm-hmm. And then that mold you take out and you put inside. So it's literally just for that toe box to give you, and it actually creates not only more support for the toe box, but it also creates a separation, which is really cool. But the normal biomechanics, oh my gosh, of a point shoe and being on point, like forces all those toes together, as you know, they're squishing them in a tiny toe box. You're creating this valgus, this point, you're causing all these toes to come into a point, which isn't good on so many levels, right? Just the stress of being on your toes alone in that toe box is going to increase stress throughout your entire toe, throughout your metatarsals. You're at such a higher risk for stress fractures throughout your metatarsals by weight bearing on them. Your body wasn't designed to weight bear through your toes like that, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it also increases your risk of forcing them in that position for things like your hallux valgus deformities, for bunions and things like that. But this device I'm talking about is really cool in that it not only gives support in the toe box and offloads some of those areas, but it'll actually separate that big toe out and give it just a little bit of a space and puts your toe in more of a normal alignment. Yeah. So there's some really cool things out there that could even potentially go in a point shoe. But yeah, point shoes are absolutely one of the first things that comes to mind that's horrible for your normal biomechanics, right?
Some other shoes that came to my mind, Irish step dancing shoes and figure skating boots, which are two very different foot postures than the point shoe.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually fitted a Irish dancer about a year or two ago for an orthotic. And when you're talking about, and I want to be clear, in terms of most dance shoes, they're so specific to the dancer, right? So a point shoe to a Irish dancing shoe to a figure skater, if I'm fitting that type of shoe, I actually unfortunately have to take the shoe away from the dancer, from the performer, and send it off. And the lab usually builds the orthotic inside of their shoe. So the Irish dancer I treated had this chronic plantar fasciitis, and she was this cute little 13-year-old Irish dancer had been doing this forever. And she had severe plantar fasciitis. And so I built her an orthotic that was very low profile, but it gave her extremely flat feet, just enough control for what she needed to do, and specifically created a cutout to give her tight plantar fascia a little bit more room in the shoe. So it can absolutely be done. And you're right, like that's definitely a more different type of shoe, but I imagine much like that type of shoe, you could also get this in a tap shoe. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I've definitely fitted some things similar to skates, but I have never fitted in a figure skate, but you definitely could. And you know, if I were to come across that athlete or that type of performer, I definitely could design something that could go in them depending on what they needed.
Awesome.
And you brought up a great point about the ballet dancers, right? And especially the ones who are on point. You know, sometimes my education to those patients is also using the toe spacer, is doing some of those other things outside of just wearing the orthotic, right? Using the lamb's wool if something else doesn't fit in your shoe, using just one toe spacer to help, you know, give you a little bit more space, or doing those things even outside of the point shoe. Like I often recommend the patients, you know, wear a toe spacer just as an exercise that goes in between every toe and splays them and gives them more room. You know, that unfortunately the shoe that they have to wear for dance every day squishes their toes together, but there's so many things they can do outside of it to help improve their pain and their function.
And for our lovely barefoot dancers, are there any principles from orthotics that we can apply to this specific population of dancers?
So there was actually a collegiate dancer I was working with last year, a collegiate male dancer who was in a senior year. You know, again, that typical, you know, dancer that you see coming in with the chronic shin splints, these chronic overuse injuries, medial tibial stress syndromes, super worried about stress fractures. And he was in the showcase performance and, you know, was leading role in all these different things. And I'm like, how am I going to shut? I can't shut this kid down, right? Like there's no way I can shut him down. He's about to go audition in front of Broadway and in front of all these acting scouts. There's no way I shut this kid down. But also he's like in a ballet slipper for almost everything he does. So what can I do for this kid? And for him, I got him in an orthotic for his everyday sneaker. I said, what I want to put you in, I know you can't wear it. Yeah. For what you have to do as a performer. And I can't tape it to the bottom of your foot, right? That's not an option either. But I put him in a good orthotic for his everyday sneaker. And I really educated him, when you're not in dance class, you're walking across campus, you're going to get food, I want you in a good sneaker and I want you in as much support as possible. And then for class, I taught him how to tape. There's some great options that are super low profile. One of my favorite arch taping just involves two pieces of Leuco tape where I call it like a navicular sling, and you truly just are pulling that navicular and lifting that navicular up. And I taught him how to do that. And he taped himself before every class, or if things broke down between performances, or between classes, he would retape himself. And that was something that really helped him be able to do what he needed to do. And then for more of his theater side of things that he was doing, he was able to wear his orthotic and some of the more dress shoe type things that he was wearing for that. But I think the education on what you can do outside of dance, and then utilizing taping and all the other tools that we have, you know, taping is one of those things that I often use even to decide if someone could benefit from an orthotic. I'll tape their arches a couple of times and I see that, okay, you improved with this, but it's not lasting. Let's give you something long-term.
Awesome. It is great to have options to be able to assess cost versus benefit for the patient. With this, and I can tell this is already going to be a big, it depends, but can you offer some guidance in advising patients whether or not to go over the counter versus the custom route? Are there any objective measures we can use to help support this decision?
Absolutely. So most of the over the counter inserts that I've used or had experience with tend to provide just arch support. They tend to just be that medial longitudinal arch support. So for the person who during gait, when you see them walk, is that like mid stance pronator, or that person who is pes planus, but their rear foot has some control, they don't have any major deformities. That's the person who could benefit from an over the counter insert. But the people who really need something custom are the ones with deformities, or the ones who have something fixed, like a fixed rigid first ray that you really need to drop down, or, you know, is really drifting in and needs a little extra space in that toe box. You know, if their first ray is really drifting in, or again, that same person who's just extremely, extremely collapsed, especially in the rear foot and needs more rear foot control, and potentially needs some posting, those are people who need something custom. But that being said, you're absolutely right. There are options for those people who can't afford that. You can absolutely get padding. I the padding that I use in the clinic sometimes to modify an over-the-counter orthotic, I order on Amazon. So getting pads for the arch, getting pads for the metatarsal heads, I would say those typically run like $10, $12 a piece. Yeah. Now they don't last as long as something custom, but you could order, you know, a whole case of those and then have them to use throughout the year and add them to something that's over the counter and make something that's more semi-custom. And there's options for tape. So there's definitely options for those people out there who are sitting, you know, maybe listening and saying, I don't have $150 to $350 to pay for, you know, a custom orthotic. It's just not in my budget. I would say on average, orthotics can be anywhere from $350 to $1,000, depending on where you go. I mean, they can just be astronomical, and very few insurances do cover them these days. So there are options for those people out there where you can make something semi-custom with padding to offload the areas. But the ones that I would say absolutely need something custom are the ones who are more in the deformities or more the extreme ends than of the spectrum that need more posting.
And I'm also wondering, do you have any tidbits about the adolescent dancer and their changing foot?
I would say, again, the people that are more adolescent, young, growing, those are the people who I wouldn't necessarily jump to put in something custom. I might try more taping techniques. Mm-hmm. The ones who are super young that I would say absolutely need to be in custom are just those extreme cases. Like the 10-year-old that I mentioned who I mean, literally was walking on her navicular, right? And had extreme callusing in that area. She's someone who I would say, mom and dad, she needs something, like, and her foot's going to grow and she's probably going to need a new pair every year. Mm-hmm. But for the average adolescent, yeah, their foot structure is going to change, right? So as you grow, it changes, you know, and they tend to start with more of an adaptive pes planus foot, and it tends to change as they get older. So some of those extremely pes planus little kids, you know, who might be start dancing as a toddler even, right? Yeah. Their foot's going to absolutely change. I wouldn't jump to put them in an orthotic right away. But I'd say the ones who are young and do need something custom are just those extreme cases.
So much information tonight. Are there any final clinical pearls that you would like to pass off to our performing arts physical therapists that are listening?
You know, I think one of them is just like anything else. This, I say this all the time, but just like anything else we do in practice, make orthotics evidence-based. And that being said, you know, we won't get into all the evidence behind them tonight. There are definitely some controversial things out there, but I treat orthotics just like I treat any other part of my practice, right? Mm-hmm. So I use the evidence. I learn what I was taught in school. I learn what I've researched about orthotics and what's the appropriate device based on the diagnosis or the patient in front of me. Yeah. But I also use my clinical experience every day, right? And I say, I know this worked for this type of patient in the past, or I know that this didn't work. And I use that clinical experience to be better at this. And I use the patient feedback. You know, maybe I'm fitting a dancer who says, I'm not going to wear that type of shoe. You may want to put me in this crazy supportive thick device and I'm not going to do it. And I need you to put this in my Irish step dancing shoe. What can you make me that fits in there? And you have to compromise, right? And make something that's going to benefit your patient and educate them what will benefit them best, but also compromise and find something that they're going to wear. And that, you know, it's okay if orthotics aren't the answer too, and saying, hey, there are other options. Or, you know, it's like I said, it's never one piece of my treatment alone. It's very, very rare that a patient walks in the door and I say, yep, that's what you need, and I'm going to correct you by putting this device in your shoe. But it's an absolute important part of my evaluation and an important part of the process. And there are a lot of patients I see that had I not corrected their gait with their functional activity and with dancing, or at least their gait in everyday life, that they wouldn't be able to continue to dance and they wouldn't be able to continue to do the functional things that are important to them. And that truly improving that biomechanical function and their ability to perform and do the things that they want to do is what they needed at the end of the day.
Yeah. So beautifully said. So beautifully said. So thank you so much, Liz, for joining us on the podcast. It is a pleasure to have you. And I know I learned so much, and I hope all of our listeners did too. So thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the PASE Practice Pearls podcast.
Thank you for listening to PASE Practice Pearls, created by the Performing Arts Special Interest Group of the APTA Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy.